Last weekend, mystery writers from the U.S. and England met their fans from around the world in Philadelphia at the 20th BoucherCon Mystery Writers Conference. One of those attending was one of England's most popular detective writers, Ruth Rendell. Rendell has received the top awards in her field, 3 Edgars from the Mystery Writers of America and 2 Gold Daggers from the British Crime Writers Association. Her first mystery was published 25 years ago. It began a series based on the activities of Chief Inspector Reg Wexford. Rendell also writes psychological thrillers, but I asked her to describe her best-known character, Reg Wexford.
Well, Wexford started off as a very conventional, tough cop, and not a very original character, because I had no idea I was writing a series. Of course, I had no idea I'd created a series character. So he was really an amalgam of other people's detectives. When I found I was with him, stuck with him, he began to change, because I didn't want to be stuck with this tough, rather unimaginative character. And he became more literate, more interesting, more sensitive, more imaginative, better read, and so on. And I think he became more interesting in that way. And he is a popular man. I think people do, men identify with him, and women wish to marry him. Also, they write letters to me and tell me they do. And people see him in relation to his children also. And I think those things have made him... It is as much, in fact, the soap opera aspect of Wexford that has made him popular as his abilities as a detective.
You threatened to kill off Reg Wexford so you wouldn't have to write novels about him anymore. You haven't done that yet, have you?
I didn't really. I never threatened it. I'm afraid that that's a rumour that's got about. I know better than to threaten that. I mean, we know that Conan Doyle did it, and of course Fleming did it with James Bond, and they both had to bring the character back. Well, I don't want to have to do that. It's never very convincing. What I did say was that I would kill him in a book to be published posthumously, you know, that I would have published after I was dead. Which would be another thing. I wouldn't want anyone else to write about him after I was dead.
In the first Reg Wexford novel, there was a woman who turns out to be a lesbian in it. And I think that was a pretty brave thing to write about in 1964, was it?
Well, it must have been 63 when I wrote it. Yes, it was quite shocking to a lot of people. It seems quite funny now because, of course, I have written novels about lesbians since who really... treating the question as if it was something quite ordinary and usual. But at that time, that first book, it was quite a shocking and exciting thing.
Mm-hmm. I think some heterosexual women writers would be very cautious about, especially in 1963 or 4, about introducing a lesbian character into their fiction for fear that someone would think that they were a lesbian and would therefore discriminate against them, given the amount of homophobia then and now. Did that ever occur to you? Did anyone ever advise you against it because of that, because people thought that you might be the victim of discrimination?
No, they didn't. I thought that the novel was so small and would have such a small readership that it didn't matter. I don't know that I would have cared very much, you know. People assume all sorts of things about you, some things which are very nice and some which are not. I don't know that it matters awfully what you say and do. I've written another book about lesbians, so a lot of people think I'm lesbian. Well, too bad.
Now, Reg Wexford restores order as the chief inspector, but you write other novels in which the police don't really enter into it. They're not very important in where they figure in. And their novels more about pathology and about evil, where order isn't restored because there are evil people or sick people or people who have strange psychopathic notions. Why did you write these novels in addition to the Chief Inspector novels?
I find that I get tired of writing one kind. I don't feel that I wanted to spend my whole writing life, which is my life, mm-hmm. writing detective stories. I wanted to write something else that was a bit more interesting. I wrote one which was a breakthrough called The Face of Trespass, of that kind, and I began to write more, and they were the kind of novels I much more enjoyed writing and that a lot of people began to like reading, and I found that it was something that I seemed to know something about.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you know something about psychopathology? I mean, where do you go to find out more? Do you go to textbooks? Do you go observe people on the streets?
Yes, you go to textbooks. I never go directly to life. I have never interviewed anybody in this way or met anybody like that. But you read, and I think that we all have these elements in us. So that if you know what you're looking for and you examine your own feelings, I think that the writer of this sort of book has to do a good deal of self-analysis. I'm sure I do. And I get into my characters and I hope I understand how one would behave if one were like that.
Do you get disturbed ever at what you find when you're introspecting and making connections between you and your characters?
Not anymore. yes, I think I did once, but not anymore. I do find that I find it rather disquieting that there are such things, elements, because I believe I do understand why people commit horrible crimes without having the slightest wish to do so myself. But I don't think I ever can say, you can't understand how anybody behaves like that, or you can't understand how can he do it. No, I can see why. Perhaps not very fortunately, but I can.
Did it take you a while to admit that you could see why?
Yes.
Why?
Why did it take me a while to admit it? Because if you admit these things in public, I find that people begin very quickly to associate you and identify with you. You know, she says she understands why some brute rapes a woman and kills her and disposes of the body. She must be like that herself. Of course, it is not so. You are not. I think now I don't really care what people think of me in that sort of way, and I'm glad that I can understand it. It makes for better writing. It may make one a more understanding person. I hope so.
I want you to read a passage from your latest novel, which is called The Bridesmaid. And this passage, there's a man and a woman who've fallen very much for each other, but she is... She's very intense and kind of crazy. You can set this up in any further way that you'd like.
He smiled at her and reached for her hand. She withdrew her hand and held the index finger up at him. Some say that to live fully you have to have done four things. Do you know what they are? I'll tell you. Plant a tree, write a poem, make love with your own sex, and kill someone. The first two, well, the first three, really, don't seem to have much in common with the last. Please don't laugh, Philip. You laugh too much. There are things that shouldn't be laughed at. I wasn't laughing. I don't suppose I'll ever do any of those things you said, so I hope that won't mean I haven't lived. He looked at her, taking a deep pleasure in her face, her large, clear eyes, the mouth that he could never tire of gazing at. When I'm with you, I think I'm really living, Senta. It was an invitation to love, but she ignored it. She said very quietly and with an intense, dramatic concentration, I shall prove I love you by killing someone for you, and you must kill someone for me.
An interesting bargain she tries to make there to prove their love. What kinds of opportunities did this challenge or bargain create for you as the novelist?
Well, it was the crux. It is the crux of the novel. I mean, it is what the novel is about. It's what, I suppose, it created for me something else that very much, an opportunity for something else that very much interests me. That is that about 90% of our lives is illusion. So that especially, I think, in a love affair, Philip, my protagonist here, lives in illusion. And this fosters more opportunities for illusion. He becomes pretty disillusioned later on. But this gives opportunities for so much confusion and hope and despair and wonder and simply mistakes. All of those things, they're all ingredients in my fiction. Confusion, bewilderment, things going wrong.
You often have surprise twists at the end of your stories. When you're working out the plotting, where does that final twist come in? Is that something you know early on in your planning of the story, or does that come to you closer to the end like it does for the reader?
Well, in the Wexfords, I have a technique. I don't have a technique with the others because I feel that you shouldn't. And the character, the action should derive from character. In the Wexfords, I simply change the perpetrator in the last chapter and go back and work it out so that it surprises me on the grounds that if I can surprise myself, I can certainly surprise the reader. With the others, no, I let it develop out of character, and I'm very glad to say that a twist will usually suggest itself to me at about chapter 18. If that didn't happen, I would be rather upset, I think, but so far it always does.
What's the most risky circumstance you've ever been in, or the most what's the incident that you've experienced in real life that's closest to something that might happen in one of your fictions?
Oh, I do think you ought to have given me notice of that question. I don't know. You see, I'm going to remember all sorts of amazing things in an hour's time when it's too late to tell you.
Shucks.
Yes, it's too bad, isn't it? But I just don't know. I don't think too many things of that kind. And I can't say that I have much personal experience, if any, of violence.
Ruth Rendell, thank you very much for talking with us.